an unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning. I had one talk that I was going to do, and I changed my mind, so we'll see. I was going to talk about the practice period, but I would be preaching to the choir, for one thing, and the other is that I think maybe it's better to do it in September, but I wanted to get it on people's minds and calendars. So I'll talk about something else. I don't know if any of you are looking at the blogs that senior students and I are posting, but they're there. I post on Wednesdays and they post on Sundays.
Mostly.
Well, so I quoted T.S. Eliot poem that you may be familiar with. It's from the Four Quartets from Bernd Norton, which is kind of neither here nor there. At any rate, at the still point of the turning world, neither flesh nor fleshless, neither from nor towards, at the still point, there the dance is, but neither arrest nor movement, and do not call it fixity, where past and future are gathered, neither movement from nor towards, neither ascent nor decline, except for the point, the still point, there would be no dance, and there's only the dance. At the still point of the turning world, neither flesh nor fleshless, neither from nor towards, at the still point, there the dance is. But neither arrest nor movement, and do not call it fixity, where past and future are gathered, neither movement from nor towards, neither ascent nor decline, except for the point, the still point, there would be no dance, and there is only the dance. And of course, it reminds me of what Steve talked about, whenever it was, the week before last, about the Diamond Sutra in this sense of, you know, what do you think, Shabuti? Have I talked about tables? No, Lord, as no tables have you talked about tables. Therefore, you talked about tables. There's no thingness there, and there's no thingness here. The still point, and at the still point is the dance. There is a wonderful description of emptiness in Musong's book about the Heart Sutra, and he's quoting somebody who is talking about, well, sure, I haven't read the book that he's quoting, but it's a great description of emptiness in the sense that it gives us a feel for that process. And it says, you know, if you had the most amazing microscope and you looked at flesh, and if you looked close, you would begin to see individual cells, and then you look closer and you would see the nucleus. And if you looked closer, you could see the, now I'm forgetting the terms, that like the protons and the neutrons. And you could see the movement there. Oh, I know, first you'd see the fibers and it would just, you know, it would look like grass blowing in the wind, this movement. And then you'd look closer and then you would see like a nerve cell, say, and then you would see the center of the cell, the nucleus, and you'd see the protons and the electrons. And you'd keep getting closer and you'd see that there was a lot of space, a lot of space. And then you get closer still and you'd begin to see quarks. And quarks scientists apparently describe as, they give them names, it's like upness and downness and beauty. They just dance, they move, and they're not light exactly. I don't understand them myself. But they're just dancing, and they're indescribable. And that sense of movement, that just you just sense the movement, and he calls it a dance. And I think it's the same dance that Eliot's talking about. The still point is that point where the myriad things come forth and experience themselves, which I believe is Genjo Koan. That if you go forth and experience things, you're deluded, and enlightenment is allowing the myriad things to come forth and experience themselves. Do you want to give me a chant book? Now see if I can find it quickly. Because Dogen and Cleary said it better. To carry yourself forward and experience myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and experience themselves is awakening. It's the beginning of the second paragraph of the Genjo Koan. That's what we do all the time. We carry ourselves forward and we don't allow myriad things to experience themselves. We don't allow them to do whatever. We want to control them and make a thing out of them and solidify them. Later on is the famous paragraph, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. Same thing, I think. I say that. It is the same thing. Happy to argue about it if you want. And it reminds me of something Reb talks about sometimes, which is just this sense that if you go into the forest looking for foxes and deer and other animals, you may well not see any. But if you sit by a pool in the forest and just sit still and quiet, then they'll come to you. They'll come to the pool. They'll actualize themselves and take care of their hunger or their thirst. And then you can experience them if you're quiet. And all of those things are easy to say. And I think that's part of the usefulness of the Diamond Sutra, because it just keeps, I think of it as sort of like, you know, slapping my hand saying, no, 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 no. Let it go, let it go, let it go. And so the way the Diamond Sutra is written with all these negatives, you know, how did I teach birth and death? There's no birth and death. Did you teach birth and death? Therefore, it is birth and death. And that language brings me anyway, brings us up short. What do you mean, no? How can it be birth and death and no birth and death? So I think that's why it's that particular sutra is so helpful, is part of the wisdom tradition. Of course, the Heart Sutra that we chant also says no, 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 no. But the Diamond Sutra is graduate school of no, 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 no. It certainly helps me. And the way Steve explained it in terms of, you know, kind of a Nagarjuna way of thinking, of no essence, no self, no own being is useful, I think. But the I love poetic ways of saying things because they get to me. They get through the head stuff. And that's why I really like the Diamond Sutra. We studied it not too many years ago, so that's why I resist doing it again in the very near future, but you can always read it. Anyway, that's, I hope, a useful reminder. We're going into a less intense period, and some of us are going on vacation. I mean, I'll be around here a lot, but I'm also going away. It's useful, it's always useful to remember, but just this time of a little less pressure from the temple anyway, see if you can just breathe and sit still sometimes, not only in Zazen, but out in the world, in a park or at your desk or wherever, the beginning of teaching a class. Just be still for a moment and let the dance dance. Let the no dance dance, and let it be a time of recreation, which is also recreation. And I'll see you in September with the summer moon above. Is it summer moon? It should be a fall moon, shouldn't it?
In September, yeah, it should be
a fall moon. See you in September. It's a pop song. Anyway, never mind. Okay, anyway. Anybody have any comments or thoughts or whatever? Yeah, Lisa?
Well, I just finished my vacation. But last week, I just got in the car and just drove up the coast. I had like no plan. Like, I'm just like, gonna go visit my sister in Santa Barbara. And then I'm gonna go, okay, I'll go up. A friend recommended a place in San Simeon where I could spend the night. So I was just sort of like driving along the coast and just stopping. And it's really interesting because everything that you're talking about was my kind of like what my experience was. And it's such contrast to the way our world, our social world is organized, mm-hmm. right? Like, I'm trying to, get more professional with my art career. And so I have to use Instagram, right? And so I started to really like try and get, and it's such a pain in the neck, but it's like changed the way I experience the world, because I'm always thinking, oh, well, I should post this, And so I was up there, and I was like, in the back of my head, I was like, I should be posting this. But I was just like watching the pelicans. Yeah. And, yeah. I was like, there's no way I can post, like, I don't want to post this. And it's just that thing of letting myriad things come forward, I don't want to show that I'm experiencing this because that kind of ruins it. And there's just something about the way they float and glide, and then they go boom and they catch fish. And then I walked away this is kind of stupid, but I saw a little chipmunk. And or a little squirrel or something, some kind of little, rodent. And I just like, it looked very skittish, and then I just sort of sat there and it came right up to me. Like it literally, at one point I jumped because it was going to crawl up my leg. And yeah, it's just that exactly what Dogen says. So, but now I'm back in the world, and it's such a shock to have to like get the wheels turning again, and yeah, it's just that contrast. I wasn't there for Steve's talk, but I get the gist of it. And it's just such a contrast to the way the world is organized.
Yep. And the pelican's always with you. You have access to that pelican anytime, just if you just breathe for a moment and let it, let it permeate you, because the past is here. I've been thinking about a a beach on Crete. My husband and I were there, and we were staying at this little village, a little east of Heraklion, if that means anything. And we asked about a beach, and the guy told us about you could take the bus and get off at X place. So we did, and we just walked down this little path, and there was a white sand beach with that turquoise water, and a few places poking out of the sand, hunks of marble. I mean, it was marble in the beach. It wasn't like an old statue or something. It was perfect. Mm-hmm. And I just, in thinking it, just remembering it and enjoying it, you know, and it's here. So don't forget the pelican. Yeah, Liam?
Oh, that was a wonderful talk. And I'd forgotten about that T.S. Eliot poem. I haven't heard it for a very long time. And I felt like when you read it again, I had much more appreciation for it. I just kind of had a small taste, but that was wonderful. In a way, he almost talks like Dogen, only with a totally different flavor or something. And I just think of those periodically, those moments of whatever's happening, of just doing without anything else. And then, but I notice there's part of me that wants to grasp that and like, why can't I do that all the time? So far, it hasn't worked that way.
Yeah, when you figure that out, let us all know, would you? Yeah, Kate?
Yeah, well, you know, this all, especially what Lisa was saying, I really get why they designed monasteries to be usually out and away from the hustle bustle. Many monasteries are not in cities, you know, and in places where there's a lot of stimulation. And I think the more modern we've become, the more overstimulated we've gotten. And with the addition of all of our screens now, to sort of add another layer of engagement and stimulation, I especially appreciate this practice because it reminds me, I guess, no, or whatever. I live in a town of 9,000 people, and it's pretty quiet where we live, and I deeply appreciated the experience of living here, and I feel myself changed by place. Just the act of living in this same place for almost 10 years now has an enormously calming, I guess, effect. And I'm just as neurotic. And I still feel that sense of, I guess it's an urgency. I remember working, and I was working a lot when I lived in the Bay Area. I'm doing my studio practice, and, you know, like everybody has the 10,000 things we all do. And a big attraction for me of the temple was that it was quiet, and it seemed that no one was in a hurry. And those are valuable things to me now, that sense of non-urgency and being still enough to sense that dance underneath everything. And so thank you for the reminder, because as I said, even though I feel changed, I often still feel that sense of urgency. There's that, oh, I have to do this, and I have to do this, and I have to do this, and I have to do that, and then I do this, and then I check on that. And there's, maybe we should revisit, isn't there a, I remember somebody doing a lecture about the 10,000 things I forget where that is or what that reference is. I'll try and look it up. But I think we all contend with that. So it's really nice to be reminded. I can, when I walk into my studio, instead of just picking up the broom or getting out materials, I can sit still for a minute. Or before I rush out to do whatever important things I have to do. It's a really good reminder. Thank you. And I hope you have a great time off.
Kelly?
It's interesting because as you were talking, there was a whole bunch of stuff that I'm interested in that all got kind of sparked off. So I'll try to keep this from random trivia. Evidently, the term quark was coined by James Joyce in Finnegan's Wake. It says three quarks for Muster Mark. And that led me to think about Joyce's relationship to Eliot, which was Joyce is kind of a jerk. And Eliot really wanted his attention. Joyce didn't want to have anything to do with him. Eliot was an American. He wasn't interested until Eliot published The Wasteland, at which point Joyce very casually at dinner one night said, "It seems our Mr. Eliot is a poet." Now, he had published the love song Jail for Prufrock before that, so people knew.
Did he say that with Eliot there?
Yes. Eliot was evidently thrilled. But this kind of leads me, as you were talking about the nucleus and electrons and protons, when I was a kid, one of my favorite things in the world was this ride at Disneyland that's no longer there called Adventures Through Inner Space, which Lisa's nodding, she totally remembers. And it's kind of lifted from Richard Matheson's Incredible Shrinking Man, but you get in a thing and you go into a water droplet and you're supposedly shrinking down, you penetrate the atom and you see all the components of the atom. And there's a point in the ride where you're supposedly getting so small that you're about to leave sort of this plane of existence. You will dissipate and no longer be part of the world.
Wow.
And there's this guy, it's Paul Frees, who's the voice of Boris Badenoff, but he's not doing that voice, but he's talking to you and he's like, should I penetrate deeper into the atom? Should I let go? And then he doesn't, and he's like, no, I must come back to the real world. But I have often thought in this practice, like maybe it'd be cool to see what happened if he let go, mm-hmm. if he moved past that point where he was penetrating the atom, where he completely, the implication is his consciousness evaporates. And I don't know, just you talking about that made me think about that and made me kind of delight in that idea mm-hmm. again.
Yeah, that's our job.
Yeah.
And one time I was a big surfer and high on acid. And I had a handful of sand and I was letting it just, slowly fall out of my hand. And it was just about all gone. And I looked at it and I thought, I could just let it go. And then I clutched it because it scared me. And I've always regretted that I didn't just let it go. You never know. Someday.
We'll strive.
But does Marilyn look like she wants to say something? I think she does look like she wants to say something. Yes? Was that no, I don't, or yes, I do?
Sure. Just wanted to thank you also for the talk. For some reason, I mean, I haven't read the Gendry Cohen in a long time, but it must have just not sunk in the myriad things experienced themselves. I don't know why, but that's really beautiful.
Well, there's so much in there, it's just different things pop out at different times.
Yeah. And then the poem also, I remember you read that a long time ago. And I was like, I remember at the time thinking, yeah, that's an important poem and beautiful. And yeah, I feel like I have those little experiences once in sitting.
Uh-huh.
And then like kind of an emotion comes up and I'm like, oh yeah, this is kind of validates the practice. That's not really exactly how I feel, but I'm like, okay, this is what it's about.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad it was useful. I love that poem, and I can't remember what reminded me of it, something or another. And so I put it in the blog because I just like, I like sharing that. Yeah, I've lectured about it before. It's been a long time. So have a wonderful rest of August and the beginning of September, folks. And Bill will be here, for those of you who are opening or whatever, Bill will be here. He probably won't be here this coming week because they have a construction project and he has to let the guy in and it's really early, and that's why he wasn't going to be here this last week, but then they changed the date, so then he was here. And next week you won't be, but so that means you won't see the Zendo altar, but everything else will be in whatever you usually do. Okay.
Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it.